And welcome to the United Lodge. I'm getting an echo and I don't know why. Can anybody notice that? Okay. Good morning all. Welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists Zoom Sunday meeting. We always like to say how grateful we are that we have this opportunity to continue getting together over the course of these last months, to continue the cycle of our meetings and to remain in contact with each other. The United Lodge in Philadelphia follows the declaration put forth that we can find on our pamphlets and on the back of our magazines. And it's mainly that even though we are all joined together by the Declaration, we are independent. We can choose the ideas for our meetings, when our meetings are, but we do follow the Declaration, which is, as it says, is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement. And we concentrate on the ideas put forth by H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. But these ideas are ancient in scope. And we do not concern ourselves with outside ideas. We focus strictly on the teachings. So, somebody's making some squeaky noises. If you could all mute when you're not talking, that would be a help. Thank you. So it holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists is the similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. So because we are just concentrating on these teachings, then that is a similarity of teaching that we all have. And the main idea for our classes and our teaching and our discussions is the furtherance of unity. And we welcome all who are in accord with these ideas. And it says, who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. So we're always looking at our main goal of universal brotherhood. So in order to understand these ideas and put forth our efforts, our lodge does have 3 gatherings a week. As now on Sundays, our meeting starts at 11, is over at 12. And we, for this summer season, except for August, because August we will not be having Sunday meetings, we are using Mr. Crosby's Universal Theosophy. And that can be found in a separate booklet entitled Universal Theosophy, or it is in Friendly Philosopher as well. So today we're going to be looking at Mr. Crosby's idea, the recognition of law. And next week, the topic will be his discussion on what reincarnates. On Wednesdays, we are looking at, of course, the Bhagavad Gita. We are continuing with that. And it's the right performance of action on page 22. And then on Fridays, we have a roundtable discussion, which is not as formally run as the our regular meetings are. It starts at 5:15, and we are able to go to 7:15 if the group decides they want to go that long. This coming Friday, we'll be looking at Jasper Niemann's article on the vow of poverty. So all of our meetings are free and open to the public. We do request time, service, and money are always gratefully accepted. And again, remember that August we won't be having Sunday meetings, but we will continue with our Wednesday and Friday gatherings. And again, please, if you're not going to be speaking, please mute yourselves. So today, as we stated, we're looking at the idea of the recognition of law. And we do want to just read a piece from the Voice of the Silence. And it is in H.P.B. Blavatsky's quotation booklet for the 10th of this month. The wheel of the good law moves swiftly on. It grinds by night and day. The worthless husks it drives from out the golden grain, the refuge from the flour. The hand of karma guides the wheel. The revolutions mark the beatings of the karmic heart. And that was on page 30 of The Voice of the Silence. So we will now have somebody who will summarize the first five chapters. Paragraphs, not chapters. And afterwards, we will take questions on the whole article, not just the first five.
Okay. Hello. Recognition of law. So it starts out with the statement, we have to assume either that this is a universe of law or a universe of chaos, chance, accident. And after reading this several times, we thought that it's very interesting, and we do make assumptions in a sense. We have worldviews coming in. When we begin the study of theosophy, we may really have the idea that it is a chaotic universe and there seems to be no rhyme or reason, although we're trying to find that rhyme or reason. So we come in with a premise. It's got to be either one or the other. So the second sentence says, in fact, we know perfectly well it is not a universe of chance, because everything we use and understand, we see to be under law. And where something befalls us, we're always seeking the cause of it. So we're always, everyone's always looking for causes. But there are, you know, it depends on our attitude. So we may not be able to discern the cause yet, but we sure are going to try to find out. And anyone who is seeking is looking for causes. There's just too many things that are, you know, it can't be just chaos. So the second paragraph, it says, the first thing the student has to learn is to perceive everything and in every circumstance, that in everything and every circumstance is the reign of law. We recognize this in part, but we really don't realize our own natures, how powerful we are in creating. We've created these causes in the past, and we don't remember them because they were in a different time and a different body. So we are powerful, and we set in motion causes that produce the results we now feel. We use terms such as destiny, fate, chance, or the will of God. So the operation of law to most minds means a fate which befalls us, wherein we are benefited or afflicted, but over which we have no control. And we don't want to take responsibility. We think we had no hand in making these causes. Until we begin to really study karma, the law. Okay. All the great teachers have said that, all great teachers of the past have said, meaning, action. Okay, excuse me here. It has been enunciated by all the great teachers of the past as meaning action and its consequences. Let us remember these are not two separate and unrelated things. Cause and effect, action and reaction, are the two aspects of one and the same thing. In Sanskrit, both of these aspects are included in the one word karma. So the third paragraph states that karma has been recognized in Christian scriptures. That's not called under that name, but it's certainly evident in the Bible. And the phrase we're all familiar with, whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. So once we get the conception of the actions do not produce themselves, the law does not operate of itself, we can see that we cause actions and experience their reactions. That is, we who set up causes feel the effects. Cause and effect, action and reaction, is the operation of the law. We can see it ourselves. There's no action unless there is a being to make it and feel its effects. Everything has a cause, and that cause lies in a past action which we've done. Law rules in every plane and in every being of every grade that is under law. And certainly all of embodied existence is under law. Okay, so we are all reaping what we've sown individually and collectively. We never act alone. We always act on in connection with others. We feel the good and evil, and we get the necessary reactions from these causes. This presents the idea of absolute justice. For under such a conception of law, each being receives exactly what he gives.
All right, thank you. One thing we do want to start out by saying is that Mr. Crosby has a wonderful way. We've noticed, we think it's pretty much most of his articles in this book. He always puts forth the idea of the three fundamental propositions of the philosophy. And he does not actually say, well, these are the three fundamental propositions, but he explains them in the context of whatever the topic is of that article. And we can see throughout this one we especially think on page 17, and we think that's from Universal Theosophy, the one paragraph, he's describing the deific essence, and it's just a wonderful description of what that, well, we can't say what that is, but it's a wonderful description of it. So we did want to start out by asking the group a question, and it's the second paragraph. It talking about what the student needs to learn to perceive. And he makes a comment, mistaking our own nature by the very power of that nature we set in motion causes that produce results we now feel. So we were just wondering what does that mean? Mistaking our own nature by the very power of that nature. So we just wanted to put that out to see if anybody had any idea of what that might mean. Yes, SL.
Well, we may not understand the process of digestion. And yet, when we eat something, our body has a power to digest it anyway. And what we eat and digest has an effect on us, even though we may not understand the process. In the same way, we don't understand our nature. We don't understand its powers. And yet we have power to set up causes that have their effect, even, and we experience them, they have the results, even though we don't understand it, and even assume maybe that we don't have those powers.
So we have these powers, but we don't need to understand why, you know, what they are, but we just have to, it's almost like we have to accept the idea that these powers will, that we do have these powers to function. Yes, TK.
We think the contribution was along the lines of, yes, we have these powers, not that we don't have to understand what they are, but we don't have to understand what they are for them to actually work and go on into nature along the path we set them. So as we've heard before, you know, motive is very important, but behind motive, right thinking is important behind the motive. But how can we, quote unquote, think right and know that what we're doing and the forces we're putting forward, we really, at this stage of the game, we can't know the particulars of what it's going to affect. So therefore, what we are doing and how we are thinking is it's really important to have the right motive, because when those forces go out, they color things that we don't even know. And if at least we had the right motive to do whatever we're doing, it's going to be a cause that colors everything in a way that's uplifting and powerful. So as it comes back, you know, it's going to go out and affect the world. Mm-hmm. So we have to be doing what we're doing for the right reasons and with the right intentions, even though we don't know the extent to which. And one example, just a simple example, is we can say something very simple in the presence of another person that maybe we really don't even know very well, but what we say pertains to something in that person's life, and we have no idea the forces we set in motion in their heart and mind just by saying something. And so the source of that power is your own words, but you didn't even know it was going to touch that person. So we keep a tab on our motives and reasons for saying it.
Right. It's planting the seed that we never know how it's going to work. And on page 15, speaking of powers, he says each one of us has the same power to perceive, to experience, and to learn. What we learn differs, our experiences are different, differ, our perceptions differ, but that does not show a difference in our powers. It shows a difference only in the application of those powers. And as was just said, it's our motive that will determine then how we are going to apply those powers, whether those powers will be for good or they'll be put out in a negative way. And of course, we are impressing all our lower nature with every thought and feeling that we have, which will go out into the universe, so to speak. Yes,
hello, LT. CBW.
What? Not yet, CBW.
How fascinating to think that, you know, we are all gods, which I'm very in tune with that, and that we are unaware of our powers, such, you know, they're so universal, and having so many things that we desire and put out, and just so much coming back to us that we don't recognize the chaos that we create. Mm-hmm. And only in what good intent do we actually reap, or, you know, the benefits of this knowledge, you know? That's pretty fascinating.
It is. Hello? Because we never know, as was just said in the last comment, what will happen when we are interacting. And it is, we have these powers, but we need the knowledge in order to use those powers in the correct way to have, we can have a motive, but who's to say that motive may be a negative motive? So we need the knowledge to have the proper motive involved. So CBW?
Well, on page 18, it said, we entertain of the supreme of law of nature and of our own being govern the actions we perform. Well, isn't this the United States of America? It took a while to come up with that name, United States of America. And if we change our ideas, we change the actions. We found that out in 1865, the Civil War. And since then, as long as we adhere to that idea of the unity of all life, do unto others as that have done unto you. It's a matter of cooperation that sustains our lovely country. Mm-hmm. As long as we hold to these ideas on page 18 in Universal Theosophy. Love ye one another as I have loved thee. So if we change our ideas, we change our actions. And once we get the gist of that, then Theosophy Hall becomes a center for a better understanding of how do we cooperate.
Yes, the whole idea of unity in that statement, unity, study, and work. So in order for the idea of unity to work, then we need to study, and as was said previously, we have to obtain the knowledge so that these decisions that we make will be the appropriate ones. SL, you had your hand up. SL, thank you.
Yeah. Our comment has to do with paragraph 5, which in the Eternal Verities starts at the bottom of 226 and goes to 227. And it's interesting in this paragraph that it points out that in order to recognize law, or the second fundamental, we have to recognize the first and the third. For it says there, there could not be action or its consequent reaction unless there were a community of being among us. There must be all in our natures, which is peculiar to none, we have common to all. In other words, we have all come from the same source. So karma is just another expression of universal unity, but it also is an expression of evolution. The causes that each one sets in motion determine the path that one must follow. This might be called destiny if we understand that it is a destiny of our own creation. So it's important for us to understand that this idea of recognizing law is not in isolation of the entire concept of evolution and the unity of life. They all have to be recognized together.
Yes, and the end of that paragraph, it says, no one else can do it for us. No one holds us back. No one propels us forward. So even though we have to do this individually, as was just said, we are working in concert with others. And it is this relationship with other people, whether they're friends, family, people we meet waiting in line somewhere, this is our duty. This is not by chance that these interactions have occurred. So everything, it is not destiny because we can change it. So it's an important idea. This, the last part of this says being created by us, it can be sustained by us or changed. And if we do not like that destiny, the effects that surround us, we have to set in motion new causes. So, yes, SL.
You're followed. So it's already been said that we don't have to understand the operation of that power in us in order to have its effect. It seems the hardest thing to recognize, though, is if we are experiencing something, and especially if it's unpleasant, what we did to bring it about. Because everything seems to point towards some outside influence or reason. It's very hard for us to understand what we did. But do we have to understand what we did in the past in order to treat it from this karmic perspective, the operation of law? Do we have to have conscious awareness of that?
This is an interesting idea, and Mr. Judge does address it in the Ocean of Theosophy, that this is one of the arguments against karma and reincarnation. Well, I don't remember what I did. How can I be responsible for it? But the thing is, if we knew what we did, it may be something that is so extreme that it would be an awful realization on our part that we have done something that bad. So the Bhagavad Gita talks about doing our duty as it comes to us, and we can almost exchange this idea of duty to karma, because karma brings to us what it is we deserve. And it may seem like it's an outside experience, but in reality, it is something, the causes we have set up. So it's an internal experience. It's an internal action as well, action and reaction, which is basically what karma means. So we don't need to understand what those causes were. We just have to deal with it, do our duty, and not expect anything in return. And it's our attitude towards that duty, that that whatever has come to us, it's our attitude towards it that can determine what our karma will be in a future life. And thoughts, it's not just actions that will determine what kind of karma we will have. It's our thoughts and feelings as well. TK.
Along that line, let's remember that there's plenty of wonderful things that come our way that we don't really know what the source was. So it works for, quote, good and bad karma. We accept the neat things that come our way. And when we do, we have to remember to handle those opportunities responsibly, to be stewards of whatever it is that comes along. Because if we're not, then, you know, that sets even more of a powerful karma in motion to let it go. So in other words, you know, whatever family that we're born into, it's very heartbreaking to see what goes on in certain areas of the city and of the world. But for those who have been born into a family that is loving, nurturing, that feeds you and educates you, that's not by accident. It's because you've done something in the past, the effect of which is to have these opportunities. Now, what do we do with these opportunities that we have?
Yes. And in some respects, it may even be harder for those that have been born into a good family, are financially have excessive money, that what they do with the goodness that they have earned can determine what will happen in a previous life. So if it's not used to a higher degree, the good things that somebody has earned in this in their past karmic actions, it could be that in a next life, maybe not a next life, but a subsequent life, there could be a downward turn for them. Yes, JS.
What came to mind in your comment was too often there's a degree of passivity in potential within each of us, that somehow the top 1%, because they have access to so much resource and power, that they have responsibility. Whereas really, if we follow the words of Gandhi, and if we focus on be the change that we wish to see, we begin to appreciate the fact that worldwide, most of us gathering this morning are quite affluent when you consider the resources available to the vast majority of folks around the world. So the change begins within. What can we do with the resources and conditions available to us? And don't fritter away energy considering what that guy, that top 1% or over there, should be doing.
Yes, and it really doesn't matter how much money you have. When we talk about the resources that people have, and if they're born into a good life, that good life comes in many different ways. And It could be a very loving household, but they may be poor. But even if you're just helping your neighbor, somebody out on the street, helping your cousin babysit their kids, we know so many grandparents that we keep hearing about them taking in their grandchildren because the parents may be having some problems. So it's not a monetary issue, really. It's your perspective on how you can help another. Again, universal brotherhood. J.S.
In paragraph 7, there's a couple of interesting turns of phrase that continue that line of thinking, you know, be the change that you wish to see. It says, this means that all beings below man and all beings above man, as well as man himself, have gained whatever individual positions they may now be in by their own exertions. It means that no being is standing still. All are acting, all are progressing in one direction or another, according to the lines they have followed and are following. That's a very interesting passage, because as we consider the beings that are lower, that are more constricted, more conditioned, soul, universality of potential for sure, but in mineral, vegetable, or animal state, they're still progressing. There's still a degree of experience being gained, but doesn't really the creative impact, the impulse, come from soul moving through the human state rather than these lower entities having free will and choice? It's perplexing.
Yes, it is. And we need to understand that the way we are impressing the lower lives in our form will determine in many respects how those constituent parts, whether it be mineral, plant, or animal, whether because we talk about a nature unaided fails. So it's our impressions on these lower kingdoms that will either hinder or help the evolutionary process for them. But and it says, as was stated, they are moving, they are all acting, all progressing in one direction or another. So how we impress them will determine whether it will be a positive progress or a negative. Yes, MDW.
From our conversation this morning in this article, we're finding that we're being portrayed as godlike in our nature. He uses the term the three aspects of the Godhead, of the creator, the preserver, and the destroyer. That we are that this idea of a poor and miserable sinner, and you know that we are we're looking at life from below up to above, and when in reality we should be looking at it from above below, that we are really divine beings, and the ideas that we hold determine our physical existence. So, you know, we all come from a am I still here?
Yes,
you are.
I just lost everything, but okay. That the ideas that we hold are the ideas that manifest in the world around us. So I think he's saying that we are the generators of all this, and we need to take responsibility for it.
So, yes, and in the ocean, it also says again that man is a dynamo, and the thoughts and the feelings that we express are definitely affecting the lower kingdoms and even the humans as well. And we are gods in the making. we all have a spark of that deific essence, and we are that spark. So we have the possibility of even more of a, you know, a spiritual aspect to our lives. And there's a question over here for comment.
Yes.
Hello.
Matt, hold on. All nature lies before you. Take what you can. This means that all beings below man and all beings above man, as well as man himself, have gained whatever individual positions they may now have, or they may now be in, by their own exertions. No one is standing still. So there's no need for jealousy of any kind or envy. It's work. It has all been done by our own individual exertions, and whatever traits we inherit, quote unquote, are from our past exertions. So, and when we see others and we may desire what they have, well, work for it. It's that simple. Just we shouldn't bother ourselves with that negative energy of desiring what others have. And we don't know the whole picture either. We just see 10% at most, like an iceberg. So it's by our own individual exertions. But all nature lies before us, and we are these dynamic beings, these powerful beings, and we've been held back by these limiting ideas that have been inculcated in us in the past.
CBW.
Yes, CBW.
Well, here we learn to take, once we learn who and what we are and what we are not, we begin to take responsibility now for our past actions today while we are here, and understand that will determine our future. And we get the gist of the meaning of universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. Then we begin to study all the departments of nature that have a part in the future. It's a grand idea of cooperation for the benefit of all. In the past, the present, and it establishes the future. And we're not kindergartners. And by the time we get into grammar school, we learn through pain and suffering, high school. But what happens? We become more material in our attitude. But here in the lodge, we learn the meaning of true love and respect. I repeat, respect for the idea of law being love beyond our idea, and their cooperation begins. Simplicity of actions. Do unto others as thou wouldst have done unto thee. But we have to apply in every department of nature, and that's where we come from. Oh, I didn't know that, is what we say. But we shake our heads, wipe away the sweat, and continue.
It's interesting, the last two commenters brought up the idea of responsibility. And that is a forceful idea when it comes to this idea of the recognition of law. Because if we don't realize, if we don't recognize the idea that we are responsible for our actions, not only now, but from the past. And as we said earlier in the meeting, it doesn't matter whether we know why things are happening. We just know that we are responsible. And it's a comfort almost to know that it's not somebody like a friend or a family member that is doing it to us. We are doing it to ourselves. And by accepting the responsibility can help us to gain the knowledge so that we can perform those right motives and actions that we've been talking about. So, MDW, you had your hand up?
Well, yes. Mr. Crosby gives us a formula on how we can move forward and keep before us these ideals. And really is just, we have to realize our own nature and see what our defects are, strengthen our virtues, and move on. And it's as simple as that, but we get stuck with our defects and we dwell on them. And I think he's very politely saying here that we need to strengthen our virtues. And that is what we need to concentrate on and just move on and not look back and not be regretful just take a positive attitude and keep on moving forward.
Yes, the lower mind certainly does distract us in many ways. And it's interesting, we have an example. We had a friend who we didn't know for the longest time had an extremely abusive, active alcoholic in her home. And you would never know her attitude. She was always positive. She was helpful. You would never have known by how her perspective on life that there was this awful issue. So it is possible that we can rise above mentally, that our higher mind, but we need, it's a hard thing to do. We do have so many distractions in our lives, and we have to maintain a spiritual outlook that it has to come from within and try not to let all the distractions that are occurring now on the outside from interfering with our higher nature. Yes, Lucian. Unmute yourself.
How's that? Okay. There's such a negative connotation to karma, and the way I've been taught and through my readings is that, anything that we really experience, it's something that it's not so much good or evil, but it's anything that is in agreement with us, whether it's a disagreement or an agreement, hopefully for a good. And such these experiences are really there to exercise our abilities and our powers that we are. And most people tend to take that as a negative situation and act on it. And I think somebody had mentioned it, and even in these works, is that, we tend to feel, an exponential, the worst of it. Of that is, that we are to experience. And therefore, we're really supposed to take that as an experience that hopefully should evolve us at the precipice and change. And that's it.
Yes, you're right. It karma is always, well, not always, but in regular society, karma is considered to be a negative, that our destiny, we can't change it. So we think it's on us then to help people who, to help people to change their idea about karma so that we can move on with this whole idea.
Hello?
CBW?
Well, we will have to admit that us older ones who had the experience of World War II remember certain words they have heard. All hands on deck. Attention, now hear this. Company dismissed, and the captain expects every man to do his duty. Well, those of us older ones who had the experience find a great deal of these ideas, thousands of years old, here printed in these books and given to us by the teachers, by Mr. Crosby, Mr. Judge. And we compare them. And we say, aha, now I understand what that means. And to do your duty, and such words as all hands on deck, attention, company dismissed. That's from a military point of view. Well, you can't expect younger people to understand what that means. So the difficulty for many of us is trying to interpret what we've heard for the benefit of everyone, not just one's own self. So here we learn how to speak. We learn how to speak, not intellectually by itself or materially, but from the heart for the benefit of all.
Yes, that whole idea of duty is, of course, is a very important one. And studying the Bhagavad Gita every summer, we really get the idea of how important doing one's duty is. And the main thing, not expecting anything in return, just to do your duty as it comes to you, what karma brings to you. And it's, you know, the responsibility issue falls into that as well. So being aware of what is coming to you is the idea of acceptance and doing it as we need to. So any, yes, SL, unmute yourself.
To follow up on a previous comment, the good and evil, we seem to apply to karma based on how it affects us is relative. What one man person may see as a good may not be. And what may be felt as a disadvantage or an evil may be the greatest opportunity. So we cannot judge karma by its effect. If there's such a thing as a good or evil a karma, it would have to be applied to the cause. Is the cause we are setting up in harmony with universal unity, the interdependence of life, the balance of nature? If so, it is good. It's a positive good. Is the cause or the lack of an effort opposed to that universal harmony? If so, it's evil, or it's productive of evil. So we cannot judge. That's why we have to focus on our duty now, because what ultimately we will experience is affected by the causes we set up in this life or another.
Yes, it again, the whole idea of doing your duty and setting up the causes for a subsequent life. And yeah, that says it all. Thank you. Yes, JD, unmute yourself.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate this conversation on karma. Somewhere over the last few weeks, in my research on the laws of karma, I stumbled across a statement that Blavatsky made that basically said that karma is unknowable, is unknown and unknowable. And yet we make all of these statements about what karma is. Now, I've over the last few minutes, I've been trying to find the source of that, where she said that, and I'll continue researching that. But I think we're making a lot of statements about karma that I'd like to see the support in the secret doctrine for these statements. When she says it's unknown and unknowable, then anything that we say about it is perhaps only personal opinion. So that's a problem for me, because I cannot reconcile that statement with what I'm hearing and what I'm reading about karma. And until I do, I'm going to have to go with chaos.
Thank you. SL.
We don't have the exact reference for you, but it is from the secret doctrine, as you suggested. What she means by that, and she does go on to explain it, is that karma is unknowable in its cause because it's one with deity. It's not separate from deity. And as deity is unknowable, the ultimate cause of karma is unknowable. What we know of karma is its effects. So what we're talking about is the way karma affects us. It affects us in such a way in all of life as it moves towards balance, as it moves towards the restoration of harmony, as it compensates, as it's a just and merciful law. But that's just its effect. Its origin, its cause is unknowable because it's one with the absolute, which is all, if that's helpful.
Well, then how does that differ from the principle of everything is predetermined? I forgot exactly the term, but is saying that everything that happened is already determined. What's the difference?
TK?
Well, we think we're talking about fate and this idea that everything is predetermined. With most people we hear who say that, they're saying it that, like, with a nihilistic point of view, because God knows what's going to happen to me and he's going to do it. And it's his plan, not mine. Well, if you put your hand in the fire, it's predetermined that you're going to get a blister. There are, you know, anything we put in motion, there's an effect that's going to come. But really, so many other causes play into what we put in motion. You know, it could be if it's only a pool ball hitting another pool ball, then the effect is measurable and probable. But beyond that, you know, it's more along the lines of you know, there's a statement, and we have to paraphrase it, that the masters can see the effect of every cause that we put in motion. So that might give us an idea of what the potential of our mind is as well, and bear that in mind as we do act, to make our effort to act with the right motive and with the right thoughts.
Well, to that I would have to agree, in the sense that the cause is unknowable. Whatever I did, whatever the universe did, it's so nebulous that it's whatever. But what's important is how I deal with the problem, how I proceed with this problem that the universe, whatever that means, has presented me. How I deal with it is where the rubber meets the road, so to speak.
Yes, and hate to cut this off, but it is our reaction to it. Karma needs to balance the universe out, and that's what these results are. So we have to end our meeting now, and we want to thank everybody for participating. Thank you.
Thank you.